I am your host, Juliet.
And I am your co-host, Teresa.
And you're listening to Mind the Gap. Mind the Gap is a podcast dedicated to discovering the minds behind the people bringing science to society. From challenges to opportunities, we uncover the impact of research on policy, community, and ultimately, you. So sit back, relax, and please, mind the gap. Today we are back with the host of the Untangled podcast and the member of the LBRF lab, Mac.
Thank you for having me.
Mac, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've been up to since you were last on the podcast?
So since I was last on, I guess I finished my third year in neuroscience and I'll be entering my honors next year.
Nice.
And then also I'm a summer student in the lab as well this year.
Nice. Are you doing your honors in...
Yes, I'm doing my honors in it. Yes. We just got the ethics approved, so
perfect. Can start that head soon. Start.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sweet. That's sweet. Ethics is a really fun thing that all researchers get to do. Yeah. So really look forward to it. Although I did amendments, and amendments are easy.
Yeah, amendments are very easy.
So that's nice.
Once it's passed, they're like, oh yeah, that unless you're doing something crazy, like, you know. But then they'd probably make you submit a whole new ethics form.
Yeah, I always see these posters up about, like, doing small amounts of whooping cough in participants.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah. And you have to stay at the hospital for, like, 8 weeks or something, right?
Yeah, I saw that poster, too.
Yeah, and I'm like, I would not.
Like, they'd have to pay me tens of thousands, and I would do it.
They definitely pay.
I think they pay, like, $1,000.
Yeah, not sure, but I would hate
to
do that.
And, like, free meals, but it's, like, hospital food.
Yeah. I would hate to do that ethics application.
You're quarantined again.
Yeah, it'd be brutal. All right, so Mac, we have a new podcast segment since you've last been on here. So we do Would You Rather Research Question Edition. These are your fun ones.
Yes,
so
I'll take one. Might hit a little close to home.
I'll take one and Teresa, you can take the other. Okay. So would you rather... do a research project related to understanding the influence of exercise-induced chemicals on corticospinal brain excitability, or...
Would you rather understand how we adapt to new environments in the presence of sensory feedback using motor imagery
in
practice? In the absence of sensory feedback using motor imagery.
I like both sides to it. I do think exercise side's cool, which I have not experienced at all yet, but...
Yeah, we do have backup questions, because we do understand that you shouldn't make a decision on the podcast.
Right now. Sean, send this to Sean right now.
Send this to Sean right now. Okay, so our actual would you rather questions are, would you rather study how stress and anxiety affect decision making, or...
If people can be directed to intentionally forget.
Probably say the stress and anxiety just because as a student, I feel like everyone has stress for sure.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That would be cool to see that side of it.
Yeah. All right. So now into the questions.
Well, I think we should mention that the backup ones are actually what Julia and I did in undergrad.
Yes. So my project in my undergrad was how stress and anxiety affect decision making.
Okay.
And we learned that it does affect decision making, surprisingly.
Wow.
But the cool things that come out of that is if you think about, like, I don't really know a lot about the legal system and how, like, judges rule different things. But there's a big difference between having your case or trial be before lunchtime versus after lunchtime.
That is interesting.
What's
better?
It's just like there's a lot of things that affect your decision making, right? Mm. And after lunch, you've had a break. You've had some food to eat.
Yeah, you've had a little bit of time.
Yeah, so judges tend to be friendlier.
Mm.
Versus if you can imagine putting yourself in a tired, hungry state.
Yes.
And then having
and grumpy.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense.
So the basis of doing research behind stress and anxiety was kind of like in a medical setting. If we can measure an individual's level of stress and anxiety and determine whether or not they are good to be making high stress, high impact decisions in a medical field.
Yeah.
So we have like a very short task with a portable device that can like determine whether or not you are in the right state of mind
to be making the decisions. Interesting.
So not put into practice yet, but that was kind of the base behind the research.
And then mine obviously was the second, which you didn't pick, which is fine. It's fine. And so this was actually, I did it at Dal with Dr. Taylor, Tracy Taylor Helmick. And we were looking at if we can, because she does a bunch of like directed forgetting or intentional forgetting, which is literally being like, I'm going to tell you this. Now you have to try to forget, which is the opposite of memory, which is really interesting. And what we were doing was seeing if people can directly forget their associations of words or things that have an association to above them. So like sky, bird, sun, cloud, and then things below them like earth, dirt, road, all that. And we found people do. They when you tell them to forget, they can intentionally forget. And that just has a lot of implications on like PTSD, trauma responses, and yeah, just memory in general, that we, as much as we can try and intentionally remember something, we could also try and intentionally forget something.
That's interesting.
First, I kind of thought I would remember it if I try to forget it.
Yeah, because
notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing that I think of is when you start thinking about breathing and then you suddenly can't breathe. Consciously.
You're like, wait a second, how do I breathe again?
Yeah. I forgot to breathe. Yeah. But then at the same time, I believe it because I know you can wear glasses that turn your world upside down and then your eyes just adjust to that.
To it, yeah.
So I'm curious about the practice effects of like how much practice you have to do before you can forget.
Well, ours, I think it was like 120 trials, and then we do a memory call at the very end, and it's one session. Great study. It was 20 minutes, and we had three testing rooms, so I would stagger people 5 minutes. I'd run three people in like an hour. It was
that's nice.
The glory days.
Yeah. So I was thinking of a new job, you know. I don't know if this is related at all. Yeah. This is not related at all, actually, but I'm going to bring it up anyways. But Kyle is currently on the job hunt, right? Yes. And I created a job for him, not genuinely, but let me know if whether or not.
I was like, he's currently at Juliet's apartment taking care of Frank.
Yes, exactly. No, let me know if you think this is an employable job, okay? So basically, he would be a pilot participant where he does quality control for participants' comfort. So he goes there and you do like a pilot test on him, and then he tells you all the areas in which your study could be made more comfortable for the participant. And it's like, right now it seems kind of silly because, I mean, what is his qualifications? Well, he has set up his gaming chair. He's so comfortable that he would sit in it for 12 straight hours. Yeah. Also, his I don't know, he has like this particular sense of comfort, you know? Yeah, I remember he did Devin's study and they spent like 10 minutes readjusting the chair.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyways.
Work for the ethics board.
Yeah, but that was what I was thinking.
Like,
is
it comfortable for participants? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that could be a job.
Yeah, I think that can
be a
job.
It'd be like a consulting
job.
Yeah, it'd be like a consulting job, and you'd have to really leverage it to be like, well, why can't I just ask, like, Jess over there to come and tell me if this is comfortable for
I know,
free.
I know. But I think there's a difference between bringing in someone who's used to it, but then at some point he would become used to it.
But
I think
And he'd have to get enough, like enough studies would have to be going on that he's not just like employed 1 hour a day. I know.
Maybe it's more of a side hustle than anything. And I don't know how you would convince
people
others.
Can fly him out to different lab locations.
I know. I think that would be so fun. It's like, yeah, I think the way my brain bounced to that idea was that you mentioned about testing three people at the same time. And I'm like, oh, we should really revolutionize the way that we collect data. And then I thought of this job. I do think it's worthwhile, though. Like, I think it could be really good because if we think about the studies that we currently have, there are definitely some that could be a bit more comfy.
Yeah.
And then you don't always realize till you're halfway through.
And you're like, no, this is not. Yeah.
Yeah, and it could be, like, really small things, like the depth of your desk that you're using or the height of your chair. Like, there's a lot of factors to consider.
I will say, though, I think if someone's going to pay him for it, they might say, where's your ergonomics engineering degree?
I know. I was going to say, like,
what's might be your... like, where's your, like, there are people who do actually, or occupational therapists, like, there are people who do that for a living.
I know. Yeah. Although there's a difference between caring about the you know, the health of your spine and caring about just pure comfort.
Comfort, yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, but I agree. It would be kind of hard to sell yourself unless you, like...
do a certification in comfort.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyways, if you're listening to this and you want to hire Kyle, let me know, you know.
We really sold him. Qualifications, he video games.
Well, you know what? I guess he has an undergrad degree in marine bio, so
there we go.
He cares about fish as well.
Oh, especially for fish.
Fish and comfort.
Yeah, fish and comfort. Exactly. But now into the actual questions that we brought you here, Mac. So, Mac, we understand that you are currently working as a summer research student funded by the NSERC USRA. So for non-Canadians out there, NSERC is our government funding agency. The USRA is the Undergraduate Student Research Award. Can you tell us a little bit about what this award is and what the application for it was like?
So I guess the award is just for undergrad, or I guess maybe just recently graduated undergrads for a summer research project, funding for it. And for the application, I applied through DAL's USRA application.
Okay.
And then I believe they just picked the NSERC funding.
Yeah.
Because I think there's also students that would just have the DAL USRA title or funding. But I just talked to Sean about that during the school year last year, and then the application wasn't too bad. It was mostly I do a section, Sean did a section, and we had like a description of the research project, and then that was basically it.
Yeah, and what was the timeline for that like? Because you start in May for this?
Yeah, so the research, I guess, project timeline, May to August, so I think it's 12 weeks, and then I applied, I want to say, in February.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a couple months ahead of when you would start.
Yeah, so I think it's, I think you're right. I think the school has a certain number of USRAs, and each department is allocated some. Mm-hmm. And then professors can apply for their students. It's like technically the students who are doing the applications. But then each department gets to decide who the USRA goes to.
Yeah.
And so some professors are a lot more successful than others, but that's just because they tend to have more students who apply for them.
Yeah.
But I remember in Victoria at UVic, there were students who would get the USRAs because they knew about them, and then the others who just didn't know about them.
Yeah.
It's nice that DAL has like a whole official website for
that
it.
That you can know more about. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did you have to include like a CV or anything for it?
Yeah, I think I had to include CV and transcripts. Yeah, I think just that, and then like the application form and project description.
Yeah. Pretty standard.
Yeah.
It's like if you want to do grad school or med school.
And it is a good little stepping stone for those applications.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. Especially if you're applying for NSERC funding later.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we've already given you money?
They're like, why not more?
Why not more? Exactly.
So we were wondering what some of the roles and responsibilities of a summer research student is.
So I think it varies a lot on lab. For me this summer, I've been helping Austin mostly with a project that we started during the school year last year. So we had a good chunk of our data collection this summer, and then which is pretty much done now. So I guess starting the analysis and different write-up portions of it also for the last month here.
Yeah, and you were doing some data input as well, right?
Yep, I helped Teresa with some data input.
Yes,
the start
you did.
Of the summer.
Yes. Yeah. Some good old Excel sheets.
Also just around to help anyone who needs a secondhand set
of hands. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's made the data collection quite smooth this summer because we don't have to worry about getting volunteers.
Yeah.
Especially because in the summer, a lot of the volunteers are undergrads who might not actually live here. So it's like...
Yeah. I remember Jack messaged me. You know what? This might be the first time I'm mentioning Jack's name, surprisingly. But Jack is a PhD student in the lab, soon to be graduated. And he messaged me. He's like, hey, are you going home for the summer? Are you in Halifax? And I'm like, did I have the option to go home?
Did he think you were like a summer student?
I think he knows that I'm a master's student, but I guess he just didn't think I needed to be in the lab this summer. I'm sure you could make your way around not going into
the lab. Yeah, especially in your first year because you're finishing your courses.
But I was like, man, now that you think that's an option, why didn't I
know do that?
An option.
You're like, this is news to me. You go to Sean. Sean's just like...
Yeah.
Like, but, don't listen to Jack.
Yeah. No, but those responsibilities were very similar to when I had a USRA. I remember my first thing was data input. And so when I did my USRA, it was the first summer of COVID. Mm. And so we were worried that these positions would even stick. Yeah. But my prof was like, yeah, we'll do it. And so he was known for driving a Porsche. So he drove... like boxes of like surveys in his little Porsche.
Isn't it the trunk's in the front?
Yes, the trunk is in the little front. Trunk. To my house, and then like unloaded them onto my like in front of my door, and then I like went in. You know, it was like this
awkward like social distance wave.
I know, and I did not know my professor very well at that time. And then I brought them to my workstation, which at the time was this immovable standing desk, so I was forced to stand, unless I wanted to take wrenches on both sides and lower it down. It was very not functional. And then I listened to like hours of podcasts while I listened to an entire, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine related one.
Oh, my gosh.
Wasn't even really that into the show. Yeah.
Just, like, the background noise while doing, like, basic data entry is...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty brutal. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Not my favorite part of my USRA. But then it gets better. I spent the rest of the time, because we couldn't collect data on participants, they were like, Julia, why don't you just collect data on yourself? So we were doing a validity study to see whether or not you can do wireless transmission of like markers for when an event happens.
Okay, yeah.
Something like that. So I had like the original, and then I had like a USB version, and then a wireless version. And I had to do like, I don't know, 100 trials each. So it was like a 4-hour testing period. Oh, and I set myself up to the thing. Anyways, it was so wonderful. It was 50 straight days, N of one study. But it's currently, we just submitted it.
Oh, nice.
So many years later.
Right, yeah.
We'll see if an N of one gets us anywhere. But yeah, it was
a lot of work over at COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? I stayed entertained because my whole family just like moved in with me, which was kind of cool. And then, I could do activities during the day. Because the nice thing, like I see you come in between 9 and 5 every day. I didn't do that. I kind of worked between whatever hours I felt like working. And then I did fun things throughout the rest of the time. So, yeah, I don't know. It was good. It definitely made me want to do research, surprisingly.
Mm.
But yeah, it's we had similar, but not the same.
But not
roles.
The same. Yeah,
it would have been nice if I was collecting data on other people.
Yeah,
but it's like the COVID version of what you did, I guess. Our next question is: who would you recommend to apply for this award?
I think students that it's kind of a different research experience, I guess, undergrad wise than during the school year, where you're more a volunteer if you're taking an honors or something like that, where you have other classes. So I think someone who wants interested in research maybe after their undergrad and wants to kind of get a different experience than they would as just a volunteer.
Mm-hmm. And would you recommend, like, not that you are like the end all be all of who can and can't do it, but in your first, second, third, fourth year of your undergrad?
I like doing it now between my third and fourth year, just because I've kind of realized I like research. So I've got a bit of experience my third year doing a full year project and then volunteering during my second year as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also kind of nice to get a head start on my honors and get stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, going. That is like true. I remember being in my honors class, and like obviously every lab is different. Some labs with honor students, they already did the ethics like a graduate student did, and they just give you the project. And other labs, like, you have to do it all. And my lab, like, I had to do it all. And thankfully I did a third year project, so I had started like my ethics like at the very beginning of September, kind of knew what I was doing, got it in. But in like January, February, the amount of people who had yet to submit their ethics or even touch data collection was wild.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, having a head start if you're planning on doing honors, that would be a smart idea.
Yeah, and I think another thing is just getting your confidence up in research is really good. And there is something nice about the USRA only being 4 months long, and they don't just need to be summertime applications. You can also do it in the fall, but it's like
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's less realistic though, because it's not likely that students are going to stop taking courses in the fall just to do an USRA, but it is possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you have to be going on to another semester.
So it's not like you couldn't do it in fourth year.
Yeah, unless you're doing a fifth year of school. Yeah. So. Yeah, and I think you can only do it once. Is that correct?
I'm not sure, actually.
I think that is,
Yeah, I think you can only apply for it once. But it is a good idea if you think you might be interested in research. It's also a good idea if you have a good connection with the people in your lab, because I think it makes for a very, like, flexible, fun summer job.
It pays well.
Yeah.
Versus...
Well, you know, it depends whether or not it
well,
depends.
Compared to, like, it pays more than minimum wage. It must, right?
I think...
I'm not sure. I get confused with Ontario and Halifax. Nova Scotia.
I think the scholarship itself is not too much, but your supervisor can top it up.
Oh, okay.
And your supervisor is expected to match at least the value of the scholarship.
Yeah.
So I think that puts it at maybe minimum wage, but sometimes... Yeah. Like, I did a USRA at the same time my brother did a USRA, and I definitely made more money than him because his prof didn't have as much money. So, but, I mean, he's also now a computer scientist, so he's making a lot more money than I am. So, you know, it's fine. It balances out in the end. But, yeah, it does pay – it pays about the same as any research assistant position, I would say. So, it's, like, a good
– Yeah.
It's a good experience.
Yeah, it's good experience and, like, I mean, it's better than – dealing with, you know, being at Tim Hortons all day or something like that.
Yeah.
Not that that can't be a fun job, but...
Well, the other thing is
I personally don't want people yelling at me when their coffee takes too long.
Yeah. It also, it allows you to be around like-minded individuals, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, some other jobs you end up, like, with a bunch of people you don't relate to.
Or aren't in your age group at all.
Exactly. Yeah. But, yeah, I think it's a pretty good, decent role.
So in addition to your summer research role in the lab, we know that you're currently going through the application process for medical school, studying for the MCAT and everything. We were wondering why you want to pursue medicine.
My interest in medicine comes from experience with concussions myself and bouncing around to different medical professionals and stuff like that to get treated. So since then, I've kind of been interested in medicine and I guess treating people for concussions as well in that field.
So are you, like, do you have, I know it's extremely early, but, like, do you have kind of a path then? Like, I'm guessing you're not, like, going into, I don't know, like, a pediatrician isn't your goal. It'd be more, like, maybe neuro or.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, yes. But whether it was a doctor doing, like, a PhD or something, I think I'd want to do neuro something and stay with concussions and that field.
That's really cool. Yeah. You know, this is a great time for me to bring up an inspirational medical doctor story. So one of my best friends, her brother was in a very traumatic car accident. I think the story behind it was gang related. Someone was going like 80 kilometers an hour and intentionally hit him on the road. Anyways, he survived. And as a result of it, he's like 50% metal. Genuinely. And one time, a funny story to break the awkwardness of this story is he went to the airport and he forgot to bring his card that he's like 50% metal, like goes through the detector and it like goes off like crazy and he has like no proof and he's like, I swear I'm like 50% metal. Anyways, after that, he received like really excellent medical care and then he decided he wanted to be a doctor and then he became a doctor and he's now a neurologist.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, and I think his car accident happened later in life. I don't remember exactly when, but I want to say either like during undergrad or like sometime in his 20s maybe. So, it's really cool to see, like, I feel like it happens a lot for people who want to pursue medicine. They have some sort of
experience.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they did a lesson with, like, titanium rods and stuff, and he made like a pile of all the things that were inside of him. Oh, so yeah, it's cool. He's a very good doctor too, but he does sometimes tell me to run away from medicine. So
to run away from medicine?
I think it's just the amount of work you have to do.
Oh, like as a career. I was like, okay, this is a little I don't think we could claim that he's anti-medicine as a doctor.
No. He's very pro-medicine. Yeah, yeah. But he also does do some 27-hour long shifts.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
The residency part, I think med school was like a bit of a, like you get through it, but I think residency seems to be the part where you're like, it's a bit soul sucking.
Yeah. Where is your hope to go to med school? Like, what's your top three choices?
Of school?
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah,
that's a good answer, okay. I think.
Are you applying everywhere then?
Yeah, but, like, I'll apply to Ontario schools just from there. I'll apply to Dal.
Yeah.
And then maybe a couple others out west. I'm not sure exactly.
I have heard Dal. I'm not just saying this because we're Dalhousie students.
Yeah.
But any of my friends who've been to Dal Medical School, the environment just sounds amazing. Like, they love it.
Yeah. I've heard that
as
well.
It's, like, very collaborative, very, like, resourceful, helpful. The students all get along and, you know, want to help each other versus – I'm not going to say the school. Maybe we can think of the school in Ontario, in a big city in Ontario. I've heard horror stories.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Of competitiveness.
Yeah, it does happen. I feel like we need to somehow get rid of this competition-based education.
I'm like, we're all here, and we're all trying to get to a goal.
Yeah.
Why don't we help each other? And, like, the ultimate goal is helping people.
I know. Sometimes it feels like med school applications is just, like, to prove yourself as an individual. So I really like coming across people who have a reason to go into med school. Because I'm not going to lie, I wanted to do med school at one point in my life. And when someone was like, why do you want to be a doctor? And I was like, because I watch Grey's Anatomy.
They're like, you mean you want to be an actor?
That is also true. I remember watching an interview with one of the actors, and they were like, yeah, we've spent more time acting as a doctor. We could have been a doctor by now. Oh. I was like, it's true. It's like 20 years. Like,
yeah.
At that point, you could have gone through med school, could have done residency and everything. Yeah. Are you nervous about any parts of your application?
I am for just the application part because it seems like it's tough
very
and
involved.
Also hard to judge who's has a good chance or not and all that, but.
Yeah,
and
well,
do as well as I can. So.
I guess my biggest piece of advice is don't measure your worth based on your application success.
That is good advice.
But, you know, a lot of people going into med school have a good track of success and then they get rejected and it's hard to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's nothing personal. I know someone who went into med school, and maybe this also is like praising Dallas Medical School. Yeah. I don't know too much about it, okay?
I've heard good things.
I have heard really good things. She applied to med school. Her grades were like good, average, like the base of what you need. So she wasn't as hopeful. She is a resident in Nova Scotia, so she had that. Her MCATs were good, but nothing crazy. She did her, what's it called? The rooms you go into, the interview thing and the situations.
Yeah.
And one of them hit close to home and she started crying. And I guess the way that she was able to still handle it and go to the fake patient with empathy while being vulnerable and stuff is what she got in.
Yeah.
You know,
that's kind of a hire that I like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a feel good story.
It's like the person.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I feel like a lot of people who are applying to med school would all do well academically.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And nothing wrong with doing good academically. But at the end of the day, I also think, you know, the job itself isn't sitting down with books and studying for tests.
Yeah.
So you do need to know a lot. But I think 90% of the job is just interacting with people.
Interpersonal skills and compassion.
Yeah.
And
yeah, unfortunately, I do better interacting with cats.
Be a vet.
I know, I did work in an animal hospital too. All right, so up next, how is studying for the MCAT going? And have you come into any challenges?
It's going. It's definitely difficult and time-consuming and discouraging at times. But It is a lot of work, but I guess with my research job this year, easier to balance it and have time to study.
Yeah.
But it has been a challenge, but I think it's going okay.
Yeah.
When do you take the test?
August 19th. So you got,
oh, coming up.
Yeah.
How many practice tests? Like, I've heard varying things when people talk about practice tests, how many you should be doing, all this stuff.
I've done a couple so far. I'm going to do, like, I guess, three more, maybe a few more, like, each of the next Saturdays to kind of simulate it. Because, part of it is, like, it's such a long test.
And, just stamina of, like, focusing.
You know, focus for 6 hours or whatever is
tough. It's long. It used to be longer, too. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's hard. I've heard that the challenging part of studying for the MCAT is boredom.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately. I don't think I could even watch a like 6 hour movie I wanted to. So it's gotta be hard. I think actually having something else to do, like the USRA, is really good.
Breaks it up. Definitely.
Yeah. Cause you can just like go back and forth between it. And I guess the nice thing about the MCAT is you can go between subjects as well, which gives you a nice break. But yeah, I can only imagine. Although I don't know if I've already told you this cause you've been in the lab all summer, but one piece of advice that my dad gave me that I like to just give everyone who tells me they're interested in the MCAT and med school and stuff is he's a lawyer, and when I was interested in writing the MCAT and I was really stressed about it, he was like, Juliet, the MCAT is the easiest thing you'll do in your careers being a doctor. Unfortunately, as like much of a huge thing it seems like at the time, if you are a doctor like 30 years down the line, the MCAT's gonna seem like the most thing relative. So if you can get over the MCAT, like prepare for the next step. And same with medical school. I think a lot of people tend to stress about the stress of medical school, but it's I think less than that of being a resident, less than that of being a doctor. But that's not to say that it doesn't come with rewards. I'm sure there's very little rewards studying for the MCAT compared to having, like, day-to-day.
When you got that email with your number.
Yeah.
You got this on the MCAT.
And you're like, woo.
You're all like, woo. Or you're like,
yeah.
I'm glad I'm not just studying for it this summer, though. I think that would, I don't know, that would be a lot.
And I think it is a lot.
And I imagine it's like different than studying for a big like exam in undergrad too, because you don't have your peers necessarily around you. Like you don't have everyone being like, wait, what did the professor say was the chapter we have to, like, you know, there's no real guidance other than this, like, however you decide to study for the MCAT, like guiding you.
It's kind of a strange
very strange.
Yeah, and I mean, they say it's to gather, you know, your study abilities and stuff.
Yeah, and also, I guess, like, different universities have different, you know, to put everyone on an even playing field for, like, science and math and all that stuff, because who knows what one university is teaching in biology versus another.
Yeah.
The biggest part I find it's hard is, like, how long it is, and if you lose focus for a little bit, you're just, like...
It's, you're just off.
Yeah, and if you can... stay focused for the full test length, and it's easier than not easy, but like it makes it easier having the content and stuff.
I would like to do a longitudinal study on like the efficacy of studying for that type of test like 20 years ago versus now, because I still think that my attention is decreasing as I age.
Oh yeah.
You know,
and I think even now with like all of our technology and the short video clips and everything, it's like I impressed myself. I went to Oppenheimer on the weekend and watched it for 3 hours, and I only got up once to get snacks. I was like, wow, that's good, right?
Yeah, so it's honestly, kudos to you. And I know that you get, like, daily questions about this, so, like, kudos for that as well.
Yeah, because I can imagine how tiring that gets. And then the whole process of knowing that people are going to ask you, how'd the MCAT go? And then after that, the process of asking, how'd the interviews go? Yeah. And then after that, the process of asking, where did you get in?
Yeah, but it's just the it's just a part of the practice, you know, like human interaction, I think.
And you could also give boundaries and be like, I will let you know when I know.
When I know. Okay. I remember my colleague was applying to med school in Newfoundland, and every week it's like, hey,
did you hear?
Yeah.
Hey, like, I heard that UBC heard, like, have you heard?
Yeah.
And he didn't hear until after he left the job, but he did get in, so.
It's like he has to do a company-wide email. I did get in.
I got into med school. Yeah, I actually think I sent that email. Because he told me, and then I sent it.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's nice. Guys, Mark got into med school. Woo!
So how do you think your background in research will help you as a doctor in the future?
I mean, I think for my interest in concussions, for what I want to do as a doctor, I think research also is cool in that sense because it keeps growing in that field.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it seems like schools want students to have research experience too, but I mean, I also enjoyed it too, and it just also gives you a different, I guess, structure to just class and studying, which I kind of like. And
I'd imagine it gives you a good grasp on digesting the information and putting it into practice. Because, like, while there's, like, obviously standards of practice that are all, like, public policy and whatever, you still have doctors. I won't name drop. But you still have doctors, like, an orthopedic doctor over at the Halifax Infirmary who is involved with researchers, and he's a orthopedic surgeon. He works closely with people in our department.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's true. And I think sometimes people forget because, I mean, I don't know very many people who went into their undergrad being like, I want to go into research. Mm-hmm. In fact, most people are like, I absolutely hate research. And it's funny because a lot of people hate research and have never done it before.
Yeah.
So, but it's sometimes you forget that most medical practices that you're seeing are founded research, right?
I would hope.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why it's a big requirement for applications. Mm-hmm. I mean, I say requirement of it, but I don't think it is a requirement, but I think it's something that makes your application stand out, because I think having an appreciation for what research is, and also once you're a doctor, the capacity that you have to progress research.
Yeah.
Because we do a lot. I know working at BC Cancer, we work directly with oncologists to help progress cancer treatments, right?
Yeah.
And so while doing research in a lab like you are today is really important, I'm sure if you continue into med school and you learn more about concussions, you'll have ideas that you want to, you know.
And you come from a different background than maybe a pure biologist or...
Exactly. You know. And then that's where change actually happens.
So. Yeah, the thing I like about research too is you can explore and kind of go with your own path a little more than studying stuff where you have to memorize that or memorize this pathway or whatever. And research, you get a bit more of a flexibility and can kind of go your own route.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a lot of problem solving, which at the end of the day, like a neurologist would do a lot of, right? You get some parts of the puzzle, but you don't get the full picture. Yeah. And so there's a lot of parallels for sure. So it is a really good, I think, thing to have both research and clinical practice.
Yeah.
Although it is a lot to do both.
Yeah.
I do recognize that it's very time consuming and not super realistic, but it would be nice if it was, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But do you see doing a PhD down the line as well?
I've thought about it. Like you said, it is a lot.
Yeah.
But because of where my interest is in concussions, I think it'd be cool to see both sides of that.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, I thought about it, but I'm not sure.
Right now, focus on MCAT.
Yeah.
But it would be cool, I think.
I know. The other thing that I find interesting is, like, during different stages of your life, your priorities change.
Yeah. That's true.
And,
that's
like,
so true.
During my first 2 years of undergrad, I cared about nothing other than my undergrad. And you best believe I put all my time into my undergrad. But as I get older, like, I want to put more time into other things. But there are people who just dedicate their life to their work and they have like really good outputs as a result. So, you know, you won't know until you know, I think, is the right answer to that. On that note, thank you for talking to us about the USRA and about med school. I think it's nice for listeners, especially people who are interested in research and people who are interested in becoming a doctor,
and like
to
the
hear
process,
a little bit about the process. I know we didn't go into like a big deep dive of the USRA, but we left the best question for last. as per usual, we know that you are a big fan of golfing.
Yeah.
So how long have you been golfing for?
We basically have a series of questions.
Honestly, for a long time, since I was a kid, but this summer I've not golfed almost at all.
Okay.
Due to probably studying and stuff. But yeah. I got a couple times, hopefully the end of the summer. It's also not been that nice here.
So like since a kid, so like yeah. Does that mean like you're really good or
I used to be decent. Now okay. I feel like I don't play enough to be that good. But
okay. So I'm guessing your parents golfed.
My dad golfs a lot, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
We, my dad got me into it.
Yeah, that was the next question.
Oh, right. Yeah. I didn't even read that. Look at me.
You can go for this.
And then we were wondering if you could golf. Oh, wait. Two parts. Where has been the coolest place you've ever golfed or your most, like, the best place for you, whatever your opinion of golfing as a non-golfer? You see how I'm talking, but I'm like, I don't know what makes it a good place to golf. Where is your favorite place that you've golfed?
In Cabot, Cape Breton.
Oh, that'd be pretty. Yeah. I heard that.
Courses
like
up there that are super nice.
Yeah,
and super cool.
Really nice ones.
I went and there then, 2 summers ago, and it was awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. Did you go with your dad?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Full circle.
Yeah.
And then part two, where's your dream place to golf? You could golf anywhere in the world.
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think it'd be cool to play like in Ireland or somewhere like that where there's a lot more different layouts than you would get in Canada. And
yeah.
I think that'd be pretty cool.
Hmm. So this is not written down, but like how good are you at Wii Golf?
I haven't played Wii Golf in so long, but I used to play it all the time.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I'm quite bad. I've striked out or whatever. Like I tried too many times.
Yes. And it does, yeah.
Yeah.
Just how does Wii Golf compare to actual golf?
I don't think it's that similar at all.
No, okay.
Yeah.
So there might be still hope for you, Juliet, with actual golf.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I'm patient enough. I don't know.
And you go to the driving range and just whack balls.
Just
whack
I think
balls.
I'd like that part.
Yeah. Yeah. I like mini golf.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like mini golf too.
And I do like pitch and putt. Have you done that?
No, I haven't.
What's that?
It's just a wedge and
like
a putter.
Yeah. That would be fun.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's like 9 holes. It's like doesn't take very much time. And
Yeah.
I do like that. But most of the time I bring it up, people are like, that's not a thing. I'm like, no, I swear it's a thing. Maybe it's like a thing on the West Coast. Maybe. But I don't know. All right. Well, thank you for talking about golf. Because we had a lot of golf.
We had a lot of questions as to people who don't golf.
Yeah. Actually, you know, before we end it, how long does a golf session last?
If you play 18 holes, it's like 4 to 5 hours.
Oh my God.
Wow.
It can be, I played once like 2 weeks ago and it was super busy and super slow and it was like 5.5 hours, which is not, it makes it less fun when it's that long.
Do you find golf, sorry, now I'm really interested in golf. Do you find it like almost meditative?
Yeah, it can.
Because I feel like you're just like sitting, like I feel like when the rare times when I'm like out to eat or something, there's golf on, I watch it for 2 minutes. Like a lot of the time they're like walking or going on the cart and then they're just like looking at where they're swinging, practicing their swing. And I'm like, it must be like kind of like you're breaking it down, you're breathing.
You're using imagery? You know,
maybe using motor imagery. Yeah.
I think they did a study in the lab
yes,
putting
they
once.
Did. Yeah.
Yeah. I think people use imagery a lot.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good question. I think that would differ a good golf player from me.
Yeah.
Is that I get frustrated.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's also so easy to get frustrated in that sport.
Yeah. I remember I went with my friend and my brother, and we were doing pitch and putt. And me and my friend talked the whole time. And then at the end, my brother's like, I didn't want to say it. But
he was like, if you want to ever go again, not with me.
Yeah, he was like, technically you're not supposed to talk while another person's taking a shot. And I was like, okay. So I don't think I'd be very good at golf.
That's one weird thing, though, about golf and other sports is no other sports, you're supposed to be quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. Most other sports.
So most other sports, like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, but golf, it's.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could not. I would be so stressed, like shaking, like, ugh. But yeah, it's cool though. And you know, I hear of people golfing, but I know very few people who like golf. That's like their sport.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's cool to hear more about it. Although I do have a friend who is like really good at golf and she went to some university in Texas and is like, getting so many awards for golfing.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'll have to search her up and show it to you. But before I do that, thank you for coming on today's podcast to talk about your experience with the USRA and with your work towards med school. We'll have an update update podcast on where you are once you reach that point. No,
obviously, we will never do this, but imagine being like, and next up, Max going to open all of his acceptance or rejection letters live on the pod.
Yeah,
he's out here with a laptop being like, okay.
Yeah. That'd be hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we know how good of a student you are and how strong of an applicant you will be. So we'll be rooting for you, especially on the MCAT.
Yeah.
Because
You've been putting in the work. Yeah.
We've seen you. At this point, I'm wondering if I'm absorbing anything. Your osmosis, So it'd be nice. It's exciting. And there is a difference between someone who's studying for the MCAT for the sake of studying for the MCAT and someone who wants to go to med school.
Yeah.
And it shows. Yes. It really does. So good luck.
Thank you.
And hopefully you'll get more golf in by the end of the
I hope so too.
After the 18th.
You said
19th.
After the 19th, golf. All right.
Up next, Hudson's hot take of the week.
Friends is a mediocre TV show that receives way too much praise. The humor lacks originality and depth, resorting to recycled punchlines and predictable comedic setups. How many times can we laugh at Joey's "how you doin'" or Ross's geeky awkwardness? Plus, the friends themselves are terrible people. First of all, the Gellers. We have Ross, the psychopath, who is constantly condescending and dismissive towards his friends, creepily obsessed with Rachel, and treats his romantic partners like trash, even the mother of his child. Sharing in her brother's self-righteousness, we have Monica. From physical to emotional, Monica is a herald of pain and a consistent scourge on her friends' lives who lacks any ability whatsoever to reasonably self-reflect. Next, we have Joey Tribbiani. It pains me to say this, as Joey is my favorite character, and while he is arguably the best friend in the group, his consistent womanizing and lack of overarching character development can't be ignored. Moreover, the lack of diversity in the cast and storylines is hard to ignore, especially for the late 90s. The show takes place in New York City, one of the most diverse cities in the world, yet the main characters are predominantly white and heterosexual. The only redeemable quality of the show is Chandler, so thanks, Matt Perry.
Well, thank you for listening to our podcast, Mind the Gap. I am your host, Juliet.
And I am your co-host, Teresa.
And this was recorded at CKDU.